stocks did not like Fed Chairman Jay Powell's warning that the U.S. could see a prolonged recession due to the coronavirus shutdown. I mean, haven't we all been talking about this for a while? But I guess when the Fed chairman says something like that, I guess we all have to pay attention. You know, I kind of wonder, I wonder what Bubba would say about that.
Live from secluded splendor via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Sean Hackett from Hackett Financial Advisors. And right after the news, Todd Bubba Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com checks in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. You know, I think if you could put Sean Hackett's brain on a constant scan, I don't think it ever shuts down.
There's a movie about that, isn't there? Scanners?
Is there? Scanners? Something like that? But, I mean, you think about it. The guy is always thinking about how this is going to impact that, and that's going to have an influence over here. And how do all the pieces come together to make a pretty picture or a stinky scenario? So I'm looking forward to see what Sean has been thinking about. Because, if that's all I get to on today's show, just what Sean's been thinking about through this whole process, then it will be a successful show.
You think we'll fill her up, huh?
I don't think we'll have any problem filling that up.
Well, if we need to, I can kill some time too. I've got all kinds of nonsense. Yeah. Just in case. See, I go the other way. I prefer not to think at all and just let things kind of spill out. Equally as interesting, maybe not quite as helpful.
Yay. Laughter's helpful. We can't forget that. Yes. Yes.
A little boost for the laughter.
Everybody feels better. Everybody feels better. All right. We've got Bubba on the line. Let's get to the news before we get to him.
Chip, improved global wheat crop prospects and expectations of heavy competition for export demand in the year ahead continues to be a wet blanket on the wheat market. Yesterday's supply and demand report included a jump to a record global wheat carryover at the end of the next marketing year, which made it easier for speculators to step back onto the sell side of wheat trade. July hard red winter wheat was 15 cents lower, 454 and a quarter. July soft red dropped 12 and three quarters, 501 and three quarters. July spring wheat plunged 12 and three quarter cents to close at 508 and a quarter, buddy.
You know, and we're still waiting to see that really solid planting progress on the spring wheat, too. So today it was just a get onto the south side of the wheat market.
Yep. Spillover pressure from double-digit losses in wheat and soybeans dragged corn prices to the downside. Selling was limited by another increase in ethanol production. Output averaged 617,000 barrels per day in the week ended May 8. That's up 19,000 barrels from the previous week. Ethanol stocks dropped more than 1.4 million barrels from the previous week, suggesting production is not keeping pace with ethanol use. Gasoline demand in the week ended May 8 increased 11% from the previous week and is up more than 26% from 2 weeks ago. May corn futures were 3.5 cents lower at 320 and a quarter. July corn dropped 4 cents to 318 and a quarter. December corn closed at 332.5, down 3.25 cents, Chip.
You know, the increase in the ethanol production on a week on a daily basis up to 617,000 barrels per day. That's good. That is good news. It's coming back, but we are so far off of where we need to be to make it a positive scenario in ethanol. We still got a long ways to go there, guys.
The sting of a 100 million bushel increase in old crop soybean carryover weighed on soybean prices today. The jump in stocks was due to a 100 million bushel cut to estimated exports in the current marketing year. That was a big enough bite out of the demand picture that a pattern of improved Chinese demand for U.S. beans could not stop the selling pressure. This morning, USDA did announce the sale of 396,000 metric tons of U.S. beans to China, with the tally evenly split between the current and the next marketing years. May bean futures were 13 and a quarter lower, 836. July dropped 12 and a half, 839 and a half. November bean futures closed at 845 and a half. Chip, that's down 11 and a half cents on the day.
You know, it's been an impressive string here. We've got that 396 split between the two marketing years announced today. Yesterday, it was 136,000 metric tons of old crop beans. On May 8th, a 120 sale. On May 7th, 686,000 tons of corn was sold to China. May 5th, May 1, it's been pretty doggone consistent. The Chinese demand is coming in here. I don't know if it's too little too late for the market or what.
And from the where did you come from, where did you close file, let's check on cotton. July cotton was 88 ticks lower, 57.46 today, with December cotton down 58 points to 57.32. And on the livestock side, choice graded boxed beef firmed another 3.35 this morning, but select graded beef slipped 76 cents. Wow. And there were reports of cash trade at $1.15 in the Central Plains, but that was not enough to help live cattle futures hold on to those early gains. June live cattle were 330 lower, 93.87 and a half. August cattle fell 327 and a half to 98.42 and a half. August feeders were down $2, 67 and a half cents to 133.07 and a half. And finally, on the snout side, a drop in pork product values and ongoing concerns about slaughter capacity pulled lean hog futures lower today. June lean hogs fell 345 to 57.87 and a half. And July hogs dropped 235, 59.12 and a half at the close, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, Bubba?
What's up? I'm hiding, Chip. I'm hiding.
Why? Why? What's going on? Are you a little afraid of those lows that you called?
They're still in, too. How about that? You know, look, it's so depressing every day to watch them trade. Because nobody really, there's really a lack of interest right now. Obviously, our farmers and friends are interested, but, you know, the actual trade, there's really no trade. You know, the real fact of these markets are there's really not any liquidity right now. Because, you know,
right.
Nobody's
really so Jay Powell comes out today and says that we could see a prolonged recession because of the coronavirus shutdown. Surprise to no one, but it still put some pressure on the market today, didn't it?
Well, I think the markets, you know, the guys who, the money guys there, they want a zero, and they want a below zero interest rate. They want a negative rates. You know, it's so ridiculous that we have to fund everything and just really print the money. Because at the end of the day, who does it really hurt? It really hurts the average guy on the street because we end up paying for it anyways, right? Yeah. So it's a crack. It is what it is. But right now, there's not a lot of interest in markets, and it doesn't matter which one you look at because they're all moving quickly and not in great directions. And hey, you know, look, we'll get through this. We need this economy to get open. Just like I said last week, we need to get things going. It's not going to open fast, right? We know that. But at least if we can get it rolling and, you know, bring up some more ethanol use, all those things that are important, that's the only thing. We can only get those accomplished if the markets open, if the country opens. And I think, you know, there's a point in time you got to say, disease or no disease, we need to get rolling here. And I think this
you are obviously on board with the let's go ahead, let's loosen things up. But man, when you look at what's going on in your state of Illinois, Bubba, holy smokes, they got it locked up yet.
Well, Illinois is a ridiculous state anyways. I mean, you know, forget about, you know, we're one of the worst states in the country. Okay. And believe me, I can't wait to get out of here and it won't be long, but it is the worst state. They're overtaxed and they're overspent. They don't fund their pension. They're a bunch of thieves. That's what they are. The Illinois is a bunch of crooks.
Oh, man. All right, Bubba. Hey, take care. We'll talk to you next week,
healthy.
Man.
Be healthy. I can't wait to come back next week. Be healthy, everybody. Have a good time.
All right. Thanks, that is Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. Coming up next, Sean Hackett. I'll bet his brain is putting out the waves right now. We'll talk to him next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us today. Got Davis Michelson with me. You know, I kind of thought maybe he was going to jump, that Bubba would take the bait there and jump all over Powell for the comments that he made. But he really didn't. He really didn't there. He just says, yeah, you could hear the frustration. You could hear the frustration.
You know, and one wonders, apparently he's more frustrated with the state of Illinois than he is with the Federal Reserve, which is interesting.
May yeah, he but... may be. There he did take the bait. Yes.
He absolutely did.
Yes,
swallowed the hook, my brother.
All right, let's get this conversation started with Sean Hackett. Sean is Hackett Advisory Services. He joins us right now. Sean, my friend, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be here, and thank you so much for having me on. I always enjoy our conversations. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I said at the start of the show is that if we just find out what you've been thinking about for the past, you know, 6-8 weeks, that it's going to be a successful show. It'll be an interesting show. So take me down that path. What are you thinking about? What is when you think about what is really influencing these markets the most, where does your mind go?
What I'm thinking about is obviously we've had this historic virus and shutdown, but now we're getting historic money printing, historic fiscal response. I mean, we have to go back to World War II spending, Chip, the last time we saw anything like this. Now, short term, it's deflationary, right? Because we've lost all this demand. We're trying to fill up the output gap, and we're dealing with that still. But we went back and we looked at the inflation and commodities in the 1930s, 1950s, the 1970s, and the 2000s. And when monetary growth, which is the money supply coming from the government and the Federal Reserve, grew at 20% greater than gross domestic product in terms of the growth rate, we got significant commodity inflation. Right now, and of course, we're not done yet, by the way, Chip. So the numbers I'm giving are as of right now, we're at 50% growth in excess of GDP in terms of total money supply growth. That the last time we saw that was back in 1972. We are setting ourselves up that once, I know I heard in the prior part of the program about, you know, when we can start opening things up and start getting some of this demand back. But as that happens, all this excess money that's been put into the system is going to find itself into the commodity markets as it always has. And the last two times that we've seen money supply growth in excess of 50% of GDP, which was the 1930s and 40s and the 1970s, you know, we had two of the most wild inflationary periods for commodities, you know, over the last 150 years. And so we are setting ourselves up for that scenario later on this year. And I think the market is so focused on the virus, the loss of demand, and the depression talk that we're hearing, that they lose sight of the fact of the monetary response and what that historically has meant to not only commodity prices but ag markets as well. So
you just put a scale of time on there by mentioning later this year. I was going to ask, how long are we going to have to wait? Because what you're really talking about is we've got this huge money supply out there, but there's no velocity in that money supply. It's not being spread out aggressively through the economy. So how long do we have to wait for that to happen until the velocity can generate the inflation that you're talking about?
Well, first of all, our base case, Chip, is that by July, we feel whatever opening of the U.S. economy that can be done, we certainly understand not everything can be reopened, okay? But everything that can be reopened will be by the end of July. That's our base case. At that point, we are no longer, the money supply that's being pumped into the economy is no longer filling the gap or filling the losses. It's now going to be in excess of what's required. So think of it this way. It's expected that GDP is going to be down 30 or 40% in the second quarter. So if you think that through, if that happened for the entire year, that's a loss of about $8 trillion of economic value. Oh. We've already printed and spent $10 trillion, and it looks like with the next bill that the Congress is looking to pass of $3 trillion, and Powell's comments today that more is on the way, we probably are going to get up to $15 trillion. So if we had printed $15 trillion and put $15 trillion into the economy, and we only needed, let's say, $5 or $10 trillion to fill up the gap, we have an extra $5 or $10 trillion that is that actually wasn't needed. That's going to be looking for a place to go. And I think that the Federal Reserve and the government are going to be very slow to take their pedal off the gas, given the near-death experience that we're going through right now.
Yeah. To hear somebody like Jay Powell, a Fed chairman, basically asking Congress to find ways to spend more money is... normally, Sean, wouldn't we say that this is irresponsible and what the heck is he doing? But in this situation, because so much of the economy was shut down, we kind of sit back and go, maybe that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that I'm actually saying it. But when you think it through, you see that we shut everything down, you actually can wrap your hands around it. Maybe that is required short term. I mean, the numbers are so insane. I just can't believe what's taking place right now. But there is an inflationary side to all of this, which will be very good for agricultural commodities and for farmers and producers, you know, as we move forward. And I think that's the message I want to convey to your listeners.
So what does the ag trade look like in that inflationary environment?
The biggest reason that we're focused on this right now, Chip, is that in an inflationary environment, a same fundamental can mean a very different price. So, for example, a 20% stocks to usage ratio in a deflationary time might mean $3 corn. Right. But in an inflationary scenario, it may mean $5 or $6 corn. But the same fundamental, because of the repricing of commodity assets in an inflationary mindset. You know, we haven't had an inflationary mindset. That really our inflationary mindset ended really in 2011-12, and we've been in a deflationary mindset really ever since. But when we go back and we look at inflationary versus deflationary times, it has a huge difference on what the pricing of those commodity assets would be. And that's why I think it's actually more important right now to get this idea of inflation, deflation correct, because if we are correct about what's to take place, even if the fundamentals remain as they are, which you know many are kind of depressed about, it still means much higher prices for agriculture later on in the year. And if we were to get some weather, some virus problems in South America, you know, some other some Chinese demand that exceeds expectations that kind of push the fundamental envelope to be more bullish, and you could have a pretty wild situation on your hands that no one is anticipating or even thinking about right now. But it's our job to try to think about these things and make sure people don't lose sight of perspective in the world that we live in today.
So I'm looking at the balance sheet from yesterday, and the bottom line is the national average on-farm cash price projection for the 2020-21 at $3.20. Is that too negative?
We believe it's too negative. Most of the time, we always start off the year with a bearish spreadsheet. You know this, Chip, right?
Yep.
We start off, and we always have too much corn, always too much corn. Every year is too much corn, and inevitably, weather pops up, acres weren't what we thought, last year's crop was overestimated, we overestimated foreign crops, you know, something comes along, you know, and changes the mix. So we really believe that we've traded, or that number that we put out yesterday is probably the highest supply number we probably will trade for the rest of the year. That's our view. How much tighter it will get depends on a lot of factors, but we don't believe we're going to trade a larger supply number in corn for quite some time.
So I completely get and understand the concept that you're saying about the same fundamentals in different economic environments generate different results. So let's say that this balance sheet doesn't change all this much, but we do get into that inflationary trade. What are you thinking for corn prices?
Well, when we get into an inflationary environment, what typically let's say we are a year from now, 6 months from now, 12, whenever, we are in a full-blown inflationary mindset. That means everyone is fully engaged and concerned about inflation. We were looking at the corn price to be up at least 50% from where it is today, if not more.
Okay, we're going to have to talk more about that when we come back, because we got this heartbreak coming on us. But we are talking with Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors, right here on AgriTalk. That's a big move that you're talking about there, Sean. We'll get it explained further when we come back next. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. China has allocated more low-tariff import quotas for corn and could expand their use of wheat quotas. USDA will hold a webinar May 14th for farmers, ranchers, and other producers interested in applying for direct payments through the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, or CFAP. CFAP funds are likely to begin disbursing in early June. The House is slated to vote Friday on a new $3 trillion coronavirus relief bill. The summary of this bill is 90 pages. It's 1,850 pages long. Kazakhstan plans to lift export quotas for wheat and flour. Rains improve Ukraine's grain production prospects, and the Brazilian wheat stocks to hit a record low. Check out all the Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
The ending of an era and the turning of a page.
Now it's time to welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, and we are talking with Sean Hackett today. Before we get back to that, let's go ahead and get an update. A recap of how the market's closed.
Well, Chip, July hard green winter, red winter wheat was 15 cents lower, 454 and a quarter. July soft red dropped 12 and three quarters to 501 and three quarters. May corn futures were 3.5 cents lower, 320 and a quarter. Dease corn closed at 332 and a half, down 3 1/4 cents. May soybean futures were 13 and a quarter cents lower, 836. Novi beans closed at 845 and a half, down 11 and a half cents on the day. July cotton, 88 ticks lower, 5746. And on the livestock side, June live cattle, 330 lower, 93.87 and a half. And August feeders were down $2.67 and a half cents, 133.07 and a half. And June lean hogs fell 345 to 5787 and a half. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
Yeah, and let's take a real quick look at the Class 3 milk futures. We had the June contract up 75 cents today. 1535 is the last.
Okay.
That market has done a nice job of bouncing from the April lows. Don't forget, let's see, what was that low? That low, 1068 on April 22nd, and we closed on the high today at 1535. So
nice,
a really nice rally from the lows. Does 1535 make me happy? No, because we're still below break even for most of the for most of the producers. But the acceleration that we're seeing here, I guess since early May, the acceleration that we're seeing to the upside, I think that's got something to do with the idea that we're going to bring on some of those processors that were processing for the food service and the restaurant market. That is starting to come back a little bit, but maybe more importantly is that USDA food purchase program that is going to use the products from those food service processors out there. So we've got some decent news. It's not great on
something
pricing,
but it's
greatly improved from where we were just 6 weeks ago.
You bet.
Okay. Sean Hackett, Hackett Advisory Service, Financial Advisors, geez, is our guest today. Okay, Sean, we talked about what this corn trade would look like if the fundamentals don't change, if the balance sheet that we got for 2021 from USDA yesterday, if that balance sheet is right, but we get into this inflationary environment, I mean, a 50% increase in corn prices, Sean, that's a heck of a prediction.
Well, it's based upon the money that's being printed, that's been spent, and that we're going to continue to print and spend. Remember, the only two other times in history, Chip, have we printed and spent over 50% growth of GDP, and it's still growing. The all-time record was World War II, where we grew at 100%. I don't know if we're going to get that high or not, but this is really, really unusual money printing and spending, and so that's the kind of octane that breeds really, really high inflation environments. And the best way I can describe it is think of Argentina, right? They always have wild inflation. And what do they do? What do Argentinian farmers do? They store their soybeans because that's how they save themselves. And they're always holding back, and the price keeps going up, and they're holding back. And the buyer, understanding inflation, is always buying, because he knows if he waits to buy, it's going to be higher tomorrow. That's the inflationary mindset that takes the same fundamental we have today and causes the seller to back away, the farmer to lock it up in his bin and say, you're not getting it, and the buyer to say, oh, my gosh, I better buy as much as I can right now. And we think we're going to be heading into this kind of inflationary mindset that we haven't been in for a while with this extraordinary monetary scenario that we're in. And we think it's going to catch everyone off guard.
So. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Let's run the same scenario here with beans and that 820 price that they put out for the 2020-21 marketing year. The national average on-farm cash price of $8.20. I'll ask the same kind of question under that inflationary environment, even if these numbers are right. And by the way, it's hard to call these numbers bearish. The when you go from a projected carry, an estimated carry of 580 million bushels at the end of the current marketing year to a projection of 405 million bushels at the end of the next marketing year, part of the reason for that is a sizable increase in total demand, which is driven by that lower price, I would assume. But fundamentally, that's not a bearish balance sheet, I don't think. And then throw the inflation on top of it, it could get pretty hot and in a hurry.
Well, remember, Chip, it's down from a billion bushels not too long ago, right?
That's right.
And certainly if you believe the corn balance sheet the way it was put out, which we don't, but if you do, certainly the corn market balance sheet as it stands is certainly not constructive. But the soybean balance sheet, you take a few bushels off of in yields, you take a few acres off, you add a little extra Chinese demand, and you get yourself into trouble very quickly. So in an inflationary scenario, as we talked about earlier, if you get a more bullish fundamental scenario, it just adds additional octane to the inflationary concerns and drives the whole thing going, pretty significantly. So that's the kind of thing we think that could happen as we get a more inflationary environment and some of these triggers that we see coming. You know, I know Jim Bauer mentioned earlier in the week about potentially the Brazilian ag economy imploding. I mean, just think of what that would mean for a change in the fundamental framework for U.S. So lots of things to be thinking about that are not as dire as I think. You know, obviously, the farmer that I'm here, my customer that I talk to, you know, is really, really depressed, probably as depressed as I've ever seen in my career right now. So.
Yeah. It sounds to me, Sean, that if you could polish up the crystal ball, look into the future, and get only one piece of information and have it be right. So we're not talking about total demand. We're not talking about what China does. We're not talking about weather and yields and total supply. If you could pick one piece of information to get right, you're going to pick what happens to this money supply and the inflation outlook.
Absolutely. It is the most important thing that will impact prices. Whenever you look at the most prosperous times for U.S. agriculture, it's getting the inflationary environment correct. It is the most important thing. And we want, if we're right about that, everything else will take care of itself.
Sean, nobody could figure out why the grains were rallying in 2008. All we knew is that they were going up. And if crude oil went up, so did corn. That's the kind of scenario that you're talking about, right?
Correct. If you look at the fundamentals of corn, for example, We had three straight years, 06, 07, 08, where the fundamentals weren't that different. But the price went crazy because this inflationary scenario, if you remember what was being talked about at that time, it was runaway hyperinflation was being talked about at the time, and everyone just got caught up in it. And, you know, crude oil, 150, here we go, it's 200. That's the mindset that can capture the markets and catch everyone off guard because they're stuck in the old rules. If you're stuck in a deflationary set of rules, you're going to miss this rally because you're going to think about 370 being the time to sell corn when it may be absolutely the wrong thing to be doing because the rules have changed on us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very interesting. How does this, you mentioned the energies there and crude oil. How does all of this and your thought process, how do you see it playing out in the energy markets?
Well, I mean, I think energy is pretty straightforward, Chip. I mean, the rig count's collapsing. Production is going to be collapsing later on this year. And we can argue how much the U.S. economy rebounds and how much demand comes in, but it's going to be more than zero. You know, we're going to have a lot more demand in 3 months from now and 6 months from now than we do today. And so if we're looking at rising domestic consumption and collapsing U.S. production, that means that the energy patch, including natural gas, is going to have a very strong rally. And that obviously, you know, will kind of resolve the ethanol problem that we've been dealing with lately. So,
yeah, interesting stuff. How does all this resolve in the meat markets?
You know, the meat market's more, I think the meat market's more tactical. It's a throughput problem. And I mean, you've talked about this on your other programs and other people. You know, we're having a throughput problem right now more than anything else. I believe the demand is there. China's buying pork from the U.S. like crazy, you know, but we just can't get the animals through. So we have to fix that, you know, and then we have the problem of these margins that are being afforded to the packers that, you know, appear to be out of balance, you know, with reality, like they did with the Tyson fire. And so we need to solve that. You know, I'm not smart enough to solve that, but there are smart people that can kind of probably know what to do about all this, but we need to solve that so that we don't, every time we have a disruption in packing plants, we don't have this problem all over again, year in and year out, you know?
Yeah, good point. And it feels like it's tough to trust any of the information or any of the signals that are being sent by these livestock markets right now, isn't it?
I agree with you. We think they're broken right now. I mean, I don't want to say that there's no value in them, but we think they've been cut off. They're just broken because of the system the way that it is. And we're very, very suspicious of reading too much into any limit ups or limit downs. It seems like every other day we're limit up or limit down, which is not really good price signals when you consistently are getting those kinds of moves. Something's wrong with the market. Like crude oil going to -45, something was wrong. Is wrong with the market.
Right. Sean, it is always fun to talk with you. Thank you so much for your time and just sharing your thought process on this. I think it's fascinating.
Thank you, Chip. Have a wonderful day. Thanks.
You bet. That is Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. Okay, when we come back, Davis and I are going to wrap up today's second hour of AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
What we got going here, Davis?
This is Robert Randolph and the Family. Yes, a little known. The leader of this group plays a steel guitar, you know, where you sit down with the little thing, and usually you hear it in country music and stuff, and he's taken it and used it for this groovy, sexy blues music. It's awesome.
Can you send me some links to that? I think I need to have that for the summer.
Absolutely, I could. You bet. Great boat music.
Well, that's what I was thinking right there.
I guess I can only confirm it's great canoe music. But I bet it works for motorized watercraft as well.
I think we're probably going to find out.
May I interject something really quick? And that is
Big Apple Joe.
We have upgraded the system here at home base. And I am not yet checked out on the system fully that I can be the one picking the tunes like I was. Okay. Uh-huh. So if you like them, maybe I had something to do with it. But if you don't like them, John Harris picked it.
So tweet your affirmations to Big Apple Joe if you like it. And if not, don't. Tweet those right ahead to hashtag AgriTalk. Anytime you like.
Love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Joe's already figured this stuff out very well.
They've been working really hard on this, Chip. I don't know if you've been privy to how much time they spent over the weekend and over the past few weeks trying to get this set up. John Harris, Big Apple Joe. I'm sure there were others in there, but you know, those are the ones that we like the best. So
yeah.
No others.
No others? Exclusively Big Apple Joe's triumph.
Oh no. This is John Harris. I mean, really.
Joe, you're too humble to be on the radio, bro. Come on now.
All I know how to do is press which buttons when most of the time.
Most of the time. Love it. Love it. Love it. All right. Good work, man. Good work.
Yes.
Okay. So we were talking about the inflation and the impact on the ag markets going forward. Nope. I think the comparison to the way the markets traded, and I've got to give it some more thought, but on the surface and knowing what I remember of the 2008 markets and the scenarios there and everything, I think the comparison to that 2008 market is legit. I do, because I just remember it was one of those deals where every week I'm sitting down to write Pro Farmer newsletter, and the most important thing that I could talk about was money flow and mm-hmm. and how much investment was rolling on to the long side of the market. Now, one of the players in the market that we learned about at that time were the index funds.
Okay.
They were long only funds, and they're still out there. They are still active in the markets. They've obviously allocated most of the investment away from the agricultural markets and into other commodities.
Okay.
All we need to see, Davis, is some of that money, those index fund money, come back onto the ag markets. And a 2008 scenario is not out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
It's not out of the question. Not predicting it, because we're in a tough situation right now.
I was not in the business in 2008. I was busy shoeing horses. When I joined up in 2012, the 2008-2009 financial event loomed large, particularly in the fertilizer space. So it took me some time to kind of get my head around the impact of that. Yep. But talking about that inflationary environment, it does make an awful lot more sense.
Sure. Sure. You know, 2008, we saw fertilizer prices just shoot through the roof. Now, there were some other reasons for it. It wasn't just because we had inflation in the ag markets. It was because we had corn moving to the upside. We had ethanol taking off. We had corn acres increasing. We had the biggest one-time increase in corn acres ever. All of that kind of stuff was happening.
Well,
so
and we
the
we
demands
did report
on the fertilizer was different.
Yes. We did report on some price fixing legal issues as well around 2012, 2013 that had finally meted themselves out. But that's beside what we're talking about. Yes.
Right. Right. So we get this tweet over the break from @Phoenix1. That's Steve Weber. He says, you know, if we've got that inflation in the ag markets, we're going to see inflation on the input costs as well. And he's exactly right.
He is exactly right.
That's you know, when we try to figure out what's going to happen with fertilizer prices, one of the things that we need to understand is what's going to happen to corn prices and the expected new crop revenue. That's why you follow the expected new crop revenue as closely as you do for corn.
That's right.
Because if it starts going bottom left, top right on the chart, and we get that nice solid uptrend going in that expected new crop revenue, fertilizer prices are going to follow that. It's just so are tractor parts. So are tractor prices.
Right.
So is farm labor. All the inputs all the inputs are going to follow that to the upside. So it's something that obviously we need to keep tabs on. But boy, well, I tell you what, yeah. Getting a little inflation in the ag commodities would be more fun than what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, fertilizer prices are really sort of primed for something to happen. It does seem like we've got a low here. I think I mentioned we had a very narrow range since the 1st of October 2019, and we're still inside that range. You know, anhydrous, I look at that specifically, right at 506 this week, down 22 cents. It's just been laying there for weeks, and that's the story across much of the fertilizer segment. Urea excepted from that. But, yeah. You know, this is looking for something to respond to.
Right.
And an inflationary environment may just be the impetus that it's looking for. And let's hope corn prices go up just a little bit ahead of it. So we've got some heads up.
Warning. Yeah. Yeah. It's like Sean said, nobody's looking for it. That's when it usually happens. National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook for May 19th through the 23rd. It's got above normal temperatures expected across the entire Corn Belt. On the precipitation side, below normal precip expected eastern half of Iowa to the south and east. Normal to above normal precipitation in the rest of the western Corn Belt. We're going to get in depth into the weather outlook tomorrow afternoon with the guys from BAMWX.com, Michael Clark and Kirk Hintz. And tomorrow morning, Kevin Ross and Jerry Bond.